The Big Picture, a Christian insight into the world of movies, television and pop culture with magazine editor Ben McKechin and scriptwriter Mark Hadley. A Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.
Glad tidings to you and your kin. I'm Ben McKechin.
And I'm his second cousin, twice removed, Mark Hadley. Welcome to episode 81 of The Big Picture for the week beginning October 16. And coming up on today's show, new Aussie offerings on the big and small screen, Boys in the Trees and The Secret Daughter.
We're going to be dining out with Cafe Society, the new Woody Allen comedy drama about hanging out in vintage Hollywood.
And not since the birth of movies has there been something so new and amazing as what we are about to unveil. Ben, the honours, please.
Mate, do you want me to do this? I get to unveil the new and amazing thing that not since the birth of cinema has anyone been so dazzled by what I'm about to say. So I get to do the honours?
You should, because if you don't take the sheet off him, he's going to choke.
Okay. For the first time in big picture history, Sam Robinson has joined the team. Sam, welcome aboard.
Thank you, guys.
Hello.
I feel like, 80 shows in is not a great time to enter into a show, but I'm really excited about it.
Oh, mate, we're 80 shows young. It's great. It's great to have you here. Fresh presenter, creator of Real Gospel website.
Much younger than both of us.
Much younger than both of us.
Very much in tune and with the zeitgeist.
And how would you describe the job description, Mark, that Sam has got on the big picture?
I like to think of Sam as the one who makes things work.
The one who makes things work. That's really catchy. That Sam, you're the one who makes things work.
We refer to him
finally,
as
80 shows in.
Yes.
81 shows in.
81. This is the 81st show, and only now are we bringing in the ringmaster we always
needed. All right. Well, how about we make things work right now, because I want to find out what's happening on the show today. Okay, Ben, what have you got in cinemas?
Mate, at cinemas this week, before we get on to what we're going to review later in the show, around on the big screen is Inferno. Mark talked a little bit about this last week, the new Dan Brown conspiracy theory meets religious roller coaster novel now turned into another movie with Tom Hanks. That's on the big screen. Also, is a movie called Masterminds, which I was a little bit amazed that this didn't get any previews, given it's got three quarters of the cast from the Ghostbusters remake from earlier this year. So it's got Kristen Wiig, Leslie Jones, and Kate McKinnon, all of them in Masterminds, with Zach Galifianakis and Owen Wilson and Jason Sudeikis, big name American comedians in Masterminds, based on some true story of some heist that happened years ago in the US, directed by the guy who made Napoleon Dynamite. And it had no previews. But no. Masterminds is in cinemas.
Maybe they saw Ghostbusters.
Oh, ooh. And Mark, what about the small screen?
Well, coming up on TV. Listen, does anybody remember Ross Kemp? You might actually remember him as Grant Mitchell in the BBC soap opera EastEnders.
Ross Kemp actually
went on to become quite an incredible TV journalist.
Good on him.
Yeah, and in fact, he's quite well awarded. And he is actually releasing his latest special on the ABC this Monday, September 17, 9:20 p.m. if you're tuning in. Ross Kemp, Fight Against ISIS. So what he actually does is he heads off to Iraq and Syria, where he follows Kurdish forces in their fight against the Islamist rebels. It's an incredible documentary. I mean, honestly, talk about right in your face. Well worth watching.
Sure.
We're about to get into some entertainment news, but you got something else on the small screen?
Something very quick. Listen, if you're a Netflix subscriber, tune in for Being George Clooney.
What's that show about, Mark? That's what it's called, Being George
it's called
Clooney?
Being George Clooney. Look, it is actually really interesting. It's a humorous look into the world of audio dubbing of a Hollywood motion picture for the international market.
Ah.
So if you're going to be the Indian George Clooney when the film gets dubbed, or the Chinese do it, George Clooney, this is your opportunity to see how they do it on TV.
I'm more intrigued than I was.
All right, Ben, I want some entertainment news. What is the latest?
Okay, mate, what caught my attention this week is that director Mel Gibson, as opposed to the actor, although he does still act, as we did earlier this year in Blood Father, but the director Mel Gibson, the guy behind Passion of the Christ and Braveheart, is coming to Australia on October 16. It's a Sunday at the State Theatre in Sydney to be at the premiere, the Australian premiere of his new film Hacksaw Ridge, which is opening on November 3. Also, possibly, are going to be some of the stars of the film. Andrew Garfield, Vince Vaughn, Teresa Palmer, Hugo Weaving, Sam Worthington, etc., etc. We'll be talking about this film on the show in a couple of weeks' time. Very, very, very interesting film about an American soldier who was a pacifist but was on the front line fighting and did some remarkably heroic deeds. That is Hacksaw Ridge. Mel Gibson coming to town.
I will take your Hacksaw Ridge. I'll raise your rubber chicken. Aardman and Studio Canal have announced that Nick Park's new prehistoric comedy adventure, Early Man, has officially begun production. So if you loved Wallace and Gromit, The Curse of the Were-Rabbit, well, Nick Park is back, and this time he's doing a sort of prehistoric take on Doug and his sidekick Hognob.
Cameras and laughs ensued.
Yeah, cameras have started rolling on the plasticine. Look, it's all coming out. It seems to be very exciting. We've seen some early pictures. It looks like good fun. It's also going to be a bit of a wait. 2018 is when you'll see this.
All right. Well, before we get to the first review for this week, Channel 7's The Secret Daughter. Mark's prepared a delicious true or false for us to chew over. What have you got, Mark?
Indeed, I have. This week sees the release of the next installment in the Jack Reacher franchise. Jack Reacher, Never Go Back, which possibly might have been a certain amount of advice they should have followed.
Never Go Back, but he did, and he's still here.
Oh, Jack.
Played again by Tom Cruise, I believe.
Yes, Tom Cruise stars the Fists of Fury former military police major who roams the US looking for wrongs to right. And the film's based on 20 books, basically, by the British novelist Lee Child. If you've ever wondered where he got his inspiration for the character now played by Tom Cruise, let me pose this for you. Mm. Did he get his inspiration for the Tom Cruise character, A, while driving past the local branch of the Church of Scientology? B, see what I did there? No, no one's laughing. Okay, fine.
That may be true.
B, reaching the conclusion he'd better do something meaningful with his life post-redundancy.
That was worse.
I know. Or C, helping his wife reach difficult cans on a supermarket shelf. One of those is true.
One of those is actually true?
I know.
It just sounds like you've served up massive false bombs.
Well, listen, where did Jack Reacher come from? We'll find out after our next review.
All right. Well, ever get that feeling that you should watch a TV show because you've seen so many ads for it?
I do get that feeling sometimes, Sam.
Well, now you're not meant to admit advertising works, but...
No, you're not.
But Ben felt compelled to check out Channel 7's new drama, The Secret Daughter, because they've been promoting it all year long. I'm sure you remember. Starring Jess Malboy, The Secret Daughter politely explores one family's hidden past and raises issues with lying as well as trying to make things right. Everybody's hurting
sometimes. If there's one thing I've always known,
Dad!
It's who my dad is.
Gotta help me, baby.
But what if he's not my father?
Is she a wealthy tycoon's secret daughter?
You have a sister no one knows about.
Don't forget now.
Billy, Dad's daughter. So you want to give?
Channel 7 has been promoting this since the Olympics.
Mm-hmm.
Is it worth watching?
Mark, Sam.
Would you like to talk about something else?
No. Look, let's talk about Secret Daughter. I did feel compelled by advertising to check out The Secret Daughter. It seemed to be all over Channel 7. When I did, I discovered, it's okay, but not... It's not as tantalizing and not as gripping as what it seems to think it is. So Billy, as the clip that we just presented then, as you can work out from the trailers, Billy, played by Jess Malboy, is this lady in this small town who comes to learn, possibly, that she's the daughter of Jack, Colin Friels, who's this rich guy from the city. And within the first couple of episodes, you get the big setup where Jack goes to see his daughter that he hasn't seen for 25 years, and he's trying to make things right. And he goes to this town, he's not really sure of the girl's name or what she looks like, et cetera, so it might be Billy, maybe. And through a remarkable amount of plot contrivances and a lot of tangents and a lot of padding that also involves Jess Malboy singing many songs in each episode, you get to the point where she comes to the big city, she meets the various family members, the possible siblings that she has, the main ones played by Matt Levett called Jamie, and from there... Is she really the daughter? Is she not? Is this a secret? Is it not? Find out at the end of episode 2.
let me just stop you there and ask, did we literally just do an Australian version of The Prince of Bel-Air?
If we did, it's nowhere near as hip or as hop as that show was with Will Smith back in, what was that, the late 80s, early 90s?
Yeah, I know. Look, is Jessica Malboy's Billy a strong central character? Is she strong enough to hold the show? Because that's pretty much what Will Smith was.
Yeah, he was. I don't think Jessica Malboy is. I don't think she's that convincing an actress, guys. Come at me if you think that you've seen something. She was in The Sapphire. She was good where she was playing a singer again. She's a singer in this show.
That's what everybody always says. And in all honesty... I see her, she is the regular, she's almost like the staple for Aboriginal acting, you know, in Australian television pieces. But I don't know if...
But she's just not as convincing. She's just not a great performer. She's surrounded by good performers in this cast. So no, I don't think she's that strong a centre. I think the issue of a hidden sibling coming into light, that's not a bad framework for a drama. I think this one plays its cards a little bit too early on in the show. So by the end of the second episode, there's some good setups around the tension that's going to come from all these secrets and lies that are going on in this family. But when you actually get there on the kind of the bit where you get big revelations, even with some of the setup, the drama has felt like, to me at least in the first couple of episodes, it's just been wedged in there. And Jess Malboy is not a gripping performer full of gravity and weight to really sell it to us either.
It's just the idea.
It's just the idea. Yeah. And even then, it's got a lot of padding in the first couple of episodes to try to get you to the point of being on the hook of what's going to happen next.
All right. So The Secret Daughter, what does it teach about not telling the truth, Ben?
Mate, the whole show is basically built on lies. So Billy and Jack, her possible daughter, have lied or concealed secrets all the way along. So there's a lot of guilt and there's people trying to come clean as well in this show. So what you get is people often telling lies and then trying to find a way to deal with it in the end. Particularly this character of Jack that Colin Friels plays, who like turns up in this town 25 years later, trying to soothe his soul. That's the words that he uses. He comes armed with money and he thinks that he's going to be able to somehow redeem himself or make things right in that circumstance. So when I'm watching shows like that, when I hear about redemption and soothing soul and trying to make amends, it always triggers thoughts in my mind of, can anyone actually make up for the mistakes they've made, the problems they've got in their life? Or is there somewhere else, gentlemen, that we should be turning to deal with the consequences of the lies and the secrets that we tell in our life? All of that was swirling around my mind, not necessarily prompted by how strong the production of Secret Daughter is, but it raises a lot of issues about if you are telling lies, etc., what can you do about it afterwards to quote-unquote make amends?
But it doesn't actually offer any solution.
No, not
Yikes.
Really. No.
All right. Well, The Secret Daughter is rated PG. It stars Jess Malboy, Matt Levitt, David Field and Colin Friels, and airs on Channel 7 at 9 p.m. on Monday nights and also available now on Yahoo Plus 7, 7's online catch-up outlet. Now, before we get to the rest of the show, Mark, I'm dying to know. You we need to know this. What's the answer to that true or false challenge you set us before we talked about The Secret Daughter?
Jack Reacher, based on 20 books, a series novelist, Lee Child. Where did he get the inspiration for his Tom Cruise character? I said, was it A, while driving past the local branch of the Church of Scientology? B, reaching the conclusion he'd better do something meaningful with his post-life redundancy? Or C, helping his wife reach difficult cans on a supermarket shelf?
Anyone? Sam, you are the amazing new addition to Please, the big picture. Please, what do you think?
I'm going to say it's not C.
It's not C.
Oh, well, I was going to say it is C because I really want it to be C. So what are you saying it's going to be?
I don't know. B.
B. Okay, I'm going with C.
Yeah, it is in fact C.
Jack Reacher
is actually basically what happened is Jim Grant, who's the author, been known as Lee Child, was made redundant and so had a lot of time on his hands and spent that with his wife in the supermarket shelf. And she said, you know, if this whole writing gig doesn't work out for you, hey, you know, you could always be a reacher in a supermarket, you know, as a packer. Reacher.
All right.
Whoa. Good name.
Well, there you go. Well, still to come on the big picture, Hillsong United, why you should watch a Woody Allen movie. A real-life married couple tell us how to navigate the dangerous waters of having different taste in movies. That's all coming up.
Welcome back to The Big Picture. And if you haven't picked it up yet, we actually have a third voice in the mix. It's Sam. Sam, hey, why don't you say hello to the folks?
Oh, hello, everyone.
Mate, with some gusto. Come on, you're new
hello,
to the show.
Hello, everyone.
You're the most exciting development in Big Picture history since we began.
Yeah.
And that's
I don't
it.
Think
hello.
That's true. I want to hear about soundtrack now.
Okay, we're up to soundtrack part of the show. It's been everywhere this week, has it not, gentlemen? Let Hope Rise, the Hollywood documentary about Hillsong United. It was at cinemas from last Thursday, so it seemed like a pretty good reason to play this.
Yeah.
Honestly, did that just sound like a recorded church service to you?
Like a massive recorded church service, Mark?
It was very massive. And look, I'm not trying to be cynical. It's a beautiful, amazing song. But I don't get it. I just don't get it.
Don't you? Really? Well, plenty of people do, and plenty of people will be because they'll be seeing, even more people will be because they've been watching Let Hope Rise at cinemas. Sam, give us your first week on the show. Give us a fun fact for all of us about what you know about Hillsong music. Go.
I know that they've got a lot of bands.
I think I also knew that, but please explain.
Well, I host a show called Fresh, right?
Yes.
And we play a lot of new music and we feature albums as they come out. And
yes.
I think so far this year we've featured a couple of albums, one from Young and Free, which is kind of their youth band.
Right.
And another one, which is a live recording that Hillsong United, which is the biggest band of all of them did in Israel. And then there's this new soundtrack as well for this movie. So they're pumping out a lot of CDs and digital releases,
Just hitting record at the church service, though? It does sound like someone's just
sounds a little bit like that. But what I was most struck by then, Mark, is the new addition to the show, Sam, is full of fun facts, and we will be going back to Sam every week, I believe, for fun facts from now on.
Absolutely, on account of the fact that he is clearly in touch.
Australian filmmakers seem to have a penchant for dark dramas that plumb the depths of the human soul, whether they belong to the racist officials of Rabbit Proof Fence or the more domestic evils of King's Cross criminals in Two Hands. Treading in their footsteps this week is the new drama Boy in the Trees that examines the twisted paths Australian males walk as they progress from children to adults. In his debut feature-length film, writer-director Nicholas Verso challenges viewers to consider how ready they are to own up to the mistakes they've made with other people's lives.
Did you ever let down a friend? Did you ever say that you'd be there for someone and then you weren't?
What's the plan for tonight?
Little trick. Little treat.
The freak gives me the creeps.
What's he done to you?
You want to run with the wolves, you got to kill a few lambs. So which one are you going to be?
Dark enough for you? I got to say.
Sounds a little bit dark, Mark.
You'll love this. It's set in Adelaide.
Oh, I love Adelaide. That's where I'm from.
Where apparently Halloween is the most important festival.
Oh,
that's the Adelaide I don't remember,
but please continue.
Well, Boys in the Trees is set in 1997 during Halloween. It's a festival which is apparently huge over there as far as the film makes it out.
Please continue.
During it, we meet two estranged teen skaters, okay? One's a guy called Corey, who's played by Toby Wallace, who runs with the cool crowd. And the other guy is Jonah, Gulliver McGrath plays him, who's their constant victim, okay? But these boys are actually once best friends, and life has broken them up. As the film unwinds, we realise the dark times that have come in between them. Look, together they embark on this really surreal journey through their memories and dreams and fears to see whether or not there's a chance for peace and forgiveness at the end of a very, very long dark tunnel.
Mate, so you've got peace, forgiveness, Halloween, Adelaide City of Churches. So this is sounding a little bit like a spiritual journey.
Honestly, there is just no end to the spiritual elements in this film. You've said Halloween.
So it's deliberate. It's deliberately intending to be.
They've got Aboriginal dream time in there. They've got Day of the Dead festivities. They've got more realistic terrors, you know, to do with life and spiritual, you know, trials like the death of a parent or the violence pubescent teens can actually inflict on each other. Teen suicide is in there. There's a lot about death and not much about anything else.
Oh,
like it's weird. So there's not much about the destination. There's not much about any. There's a great sense of guilt and longing and a desire to have everything work out, but no real explanation about how you go about working things out other than wishing for a better time.
Sam just mentioned before that this sounds like a lot of other Australian dramas, the darkness, looking at the elements of life often that can be harder or torturous and that kind of thing. But in the same year that we've had Kubo and the Two Strings, which from what you're describing to me had very similar issues and themes going on, which I know you quite liked, Kubo and the Two Strings. I'm getting to the question of, what did you think of this then, Boys in the Trees? Like an Australian version of Kubo, to
look,
some description.
I want to say to you both now, I wanted to like this film.
That's never a good way to start.
No,
is
I
it?
Really
not. That's not going to end well, is it, Sam?
That's not an excuse.
No.
There's so much to like about it, okay? I actually think Nicholas Verso is an incredible director. We should watch him. He's a guy to watch, you know. His talent, visually, it's great, okay? And the acting, Toby Wallace is brilliant. Okay, I think that's fantastic. You know I'm building up to something.
Yes, keep going.
The script's awful. The script's bad, and this is coming from a scriptwriter. I've got to say, the problem is that it's really just the most awful collection of cliches you've ever seen to get mounted together in a script.
Oh, and I watched Secret Daughter earlier in the week, and that had a lot of cliches piled into that script.
I'm telling you now, this tops TV cliche. Look, there's a great sense of guilt and desire and need to make things right, but in the end, the film just obscures all the questions with really sort of crummy cliches and you know, a bad teen moments that you just go, gosh, I thought we'd left that behind, the Brady Bunch.
Mm.
It's a hodgepodge in the end of Donnie Darko and the others and the Kite Runner, believe it or not. Right. Like, there's just
all sounds like a movie I would like to see with all those things in it.
Hodgepodge.
All right, hodgepodge.
So what went wrong then, Mark?
Well, basically what went wrong is that this is a lesson plot. Okay, there are three basic script types, and this is the life lesson type, okay? Which you're supposed to be led as an audience through an arc where you come to the end and you go, yes, I realize what's being said and I can affirm that life truth. But there's just no life truth waiting at the end, apart from, you know, you really should follow your dreams. You really should do something about that. And that's really unhelpful when you think in such an earnest work about what to do about guilt and forgiveness and death, if you don't work out what some reasonable solution, then you've really gone nowhere. And at the end of the film, I just walked out flat.
Yeah. All right. Well, that's Boys in the Trees. It's rated M for mature themes, violence, coarse language, sexual references, and drug abuse. That's most things there. It stars Toby Wallace, Gulliver McGrath.
Things not to laugh at, Mark.
Laughing at something that Sam said earlier.
Okay.
Touche.
Okay, Mitzi Ruhlman, and it opens this coming Thursday, October 20th.
Mate, still to come on the show, should you watch a new and an old Woody Allen movie? We're also going to speak with a real couple who share their movie secrets, and I'm going to serve up the top five foods that Hollywood convinced me to try. Welcome back to the show, and particularly welcome back to you, Sam. It's nice that halfway through the first show that you've been part of, you're still here.
Oh,
that's fantastic that you're still here. Good, because you are the guy who makes things work. So I'm really glad you're here.
Well, you guys, I'm glad you're here because you're
Thank
the people
you.
Who
We're
have
all
the
glad everybody's here.
Oh, I'm it's so good. Glad I'm here.
Hug. Let's hug it out.
Okay, let me take us onto the vault then.
Please.
While we're all still here. If you've been with us through the show so far, you'll know that Ben will be reviewing soon legendary director Woody Allen's latest foray, Cafe Society. If you haven't, you can always work out what you missed by checking out the podcast at thebigpicturewebsite.com. That's thebigpicturewebsite.com. Of course, some of you might be asking an entirely different question. Why bother? With Woody Allen, I mean. Most people will have heard of the legendary filmmaker, but should you really bother going out and digging up his past works? Well, that's a question we put to our resident American, Russ Matthews, for our Vault segment this week. 3 minutes from Russ to tell us why Woody Allen is worth your time. Russ, thanks very much for joining us again on The Big Picture.
Mark.
And it's an appropriate setting. We're actually sitting in a high rise. We're about to discuss Woody Allen. This is as close as we can come to downtown Manhattan, at least as far as Australia is concerned. So you've got a very big job. Your job is to do something which, you know, my wife had to do for me, to convince me that Woody Allen was actually worth watching. I remember her sitting me down and watching some appalling films, and that was supposed to be the lay down mazere argument that I should watch Woody Allen. But we're going to give you 3 minutes to convince our uninitiated listeners that Woody Allen is worth watching. Okay. And your time starts now.
Interesting that you're going to actually cause me to some neuroses just by going through and doing this.
How Woody Allen?
How very Woody Allen. In one of his interviews, he actually said that his films are about neurotic people and neurotic relationships, and so it, of course, is a neurotic style, is truly quintessential Woody Allen.
Yeah, you're burning up time here. Come on, hurry up.
Burning up time, so exactly. So looking at his haphazard style, his non-linear fashion, the best place to start, if you want, especially even talking with your wife, would be Annie Hall. Annie Hall would be kind of where it really launched Woody Allen as Woody Allen, and it really showed his style, his romantic comedy that was like none other in history, and actually I don't think ever has been quite like this since, but he used this, like the subtitled romantic double speak, and he looks at also this character of Alvy Singer and his flashbacks to his childhood. There's typical Woody Allen. But
why is that your business?
Yeah, exactly. So it's a perfect film to start if you really want to start in looking at what Woody Allen films are like. So Annie Hall would be a great place for you.
And is that your pick for a couple film too?
It would be, you definitely could watch it because, I mean, it's sort of a romantic comedy, but it's going to cause you some neuroses in your relationship anyway.
Speaking of your neuroses, you've got a minute and a half left.
Okay, there we go. So the next one, interestingly enough, goes to just kind of shows that Woody Allen doesn't stay within one genre. And so this one is a thriller slash comedy. Is it called Crimes and Misdemeanors?
Oh, I thought you were going to go Manhattan Murder Mystery.
No, Crimes and Misdemeanors was actually my second one, just because I loved Martin Landau in this film, and really looking at the kind of the autobiographical nature of Woody Allen, how he kind of puts himself in all films, but also even in his main characters, he even kind of shows, and even this one specific line saying, "God is a luxury that I cannot afford," is definitely a perfect line, especially from a Woody Allen script. And then, but if you really want to go through, make it, especially maybe it's probably one of the easiest jumps, especially because it just occurred not back in 2011, would be Midnight in Paris, would be his last film.
Okay, so Midnight in Paris, that's like quite a bizarre twisting script, that one.
It definitely won, and also one that doesn't have Woody Allen in it. But really, the Owen Wilson character ends up playing Woody Allen in a way. If you really look at him and you kind of think of Woody Allen and who he plays in all of his films, really playing himself, that Owen Wilson does this too. But it was actually the biggest hit of Woody Allen's career. So it took 45 years after his first film to be his biggest one. Also, he won the Academy Award for Best Original Screenplay.
What would you say? Is it kind of mystery come comedy?
Yeah, it's kind of a comedy, but then it's also a time travel film, because there's this film where he all of a sudden at midnight, he always travels back into a different era and really gets to meet up with these great authors and of the past. So it's one that I think that would be accessible for today's audience. I would probably just finish with this quote. It actually comes from the producer, Ed Wilson. He says this: "I think that everyone should get out to see one of Woody Allen's movies, because I think his films are still entertaining to teenagers up to grandparents."
Wow, I'm going to go find my grandparents.
Woody Allen directed his first feature film 50 years ago.
50 years ago.
50 years ago. I was not around then, for sure. Since then, he's pretty much released one new movie every year, a staggering back catalogue which ranges from fabulous to forgettable. Cafe Society is Allen's latest annual offering. Set in Hollywood in the 1930s, Cafe Society deals with the usual Woody Allen things: love, infidelity, relationship problems. And does existence mean anything at all?
Bonnie, this is my nephew, Bobby.
Howard's a two-time Academy Award winner.
Wow, congratulations.
Hey, thank you. You've never heard of me. I'm a writer.
Welcome to Hollywood.
Hey, pal, you bored already?
I'm kind of half bored, half fascinated. My brother Ben owns a nightclub. He's asked me to help him run it.
When will you know?
Well, we have to see if the owner's willing to sell. We're trying to persuade him.
You ask politely, people listen.
Are there more beautiful girls in Hollywood or New York?
Why, is that how you'll decide where you'll live?
Gentlemen, Jesse Eisenberg is starring in Cafe Society as Bobby. He's like this sap from New York who moves to Los Angeles, tries to make it big over there. He hooks up with his uncle, Phil, played by Steve Carell, who's like this big shot agent. And this is set in sort of the 30s, 40s, in like vintage Hollywood times. And then they both become connected to Vonnie, played by Kristen Stewart of the Twilight series fame. She's the office girl of Steve Carell. She's also his mistress, but she gets entwined with Bobby, Jesse Eisenberg's character, as you could expect, because this is a Woody Allen film.
Sounds like a bit of a Social Network.
Ah!
Thank you.
Can we move on quickly?
Please. Let's. Look, let's talk about what he's actually done. Woody Allen's directed about 47 films. Mm-hmm. Where does this sit on the Woody Allen spectrometer?
I feel I can speak to this gentleman as something of an expert because years ago, at least 10 years ago, here it comes. I watched, not only did I speak to Woody Allen, I've spoken with Woody Allen.
Yeah, okay.
But I also watched about 35, 36 by that point of his films in the period of a month. So I kind of surveyed all of his stuff. And I came out actually liking it still after watching all those things. I think he's gone off the boil a little bit in the last couple of years, although saying that, he's made Blue Jasmine in the last couple of years, A Midnight in Paris, and a lot of those, and Irrational Man, a lot of those are really good. Though I think Cafe Society is more on the scale of Magic in the Moonlight. Did you see that one? Which It had Emma Stone and Colin Firth, and it was just a bit shrug your shoulders. Woody Allen by the numbers. It's a bit like someone that tried to make a Woody Allen movie. It's just that Woody Allen is actually making his own movie. So it's occasionally mildly amusing, Cafe Society, but it treads water a lot. It ambles along. It shifts between Los Angeles and back to New York City for no apparent reason. Great cast, as you'd expect from a Woody Allen film. But as the clip that we just played demonstrated, there was a quote in that that said, "I was half bored, half fascinated." I reckon that is my response to Cafe Society.
Is he as cynical about love and relationships as he normally is? Does he carry that through?
Yep.
Oh,
yep.
Wow.
Like,
okay,
so Woody Allen is like, it's not a dog who changes, who gets new tricks too often, really. He's a great film writer and director, Woody Allen, at being a guy who comes out with the emperor's new clothes. You know, like he finds new ways to express the same thing over and over again. So yes, he remains cynical about love and relationships. And I think part of the cynicism and then part of his fixation on how fractured relationships can be, particularly in marriage, particularly when it comes to infidelity and people just not being able to love one person, all of that makes for a really flimsy plot on this particular occasion. And as he continues to fixate on these things but yet never really provide answers for it, as a viewer, I just kind of drifted along, which I feel a lot of the characters do in this. So Jesse Eisenberg is a great, well cast as the kind of Woody Allen character in this film. Steve Carell, great to have him up on screen. And there's plenty of other famous faces in this. But overall, again, go back to the bit where I just sort of shrugged my shoulders and just thought, like, can't you get past these things because you're not really offering me any solutions, Woody Allen. Even though you've lived so long and made 47 movies about the same thing, basically, you haven't really provided me much.
So if you're hanging out for a Woody Allen film, you're set. But if you're looking for answers, you're not.
Yes, okay. I would say exactly that.
So speaking of that, does it go any deeper than surface level, Cafe Society?
Not so much. So not particularly when it comes to marriage, relationships, and love. Woody Allen's really big on love, but pretty much love on anyone's terms, that you can just do whatever you want within the parameters of love as long as you say that it's love. Where it does dive under the surface is a little bit interesting and very unexpected. Although this does turn up in a lot of other Woody Allen movies too, which is existence. What's the meaning of existence? What's the purpose of life? What are we doing here? And there's an amazing point about two-thirds of the way through the movie that comes out of nowhere, where a character begins to talk about the Jewish faith and then say things like the Jewish faith doesn't believe in the afterlife, which I actually don't think is true, but the character on screen says that. And then there's some other characters that talk about why the Jewish faith and also the God of the Bible and therefore Christianity should do a better job of advertising themselves better because more people would be interested in their wares if they had something to sell.
So he's actually saying there's something positive there. We're just not doing a good job.
Well, that's the hard thing to work out. What exactly is he saying? So apart from the fact that I think you should go and check whether Jewish people do or do not believe in the afterlife, the bit about whether people who believe in the God of the Bible should change what they're selling, I found very, very interesting. And if you look at many other Woody Allen films, he's a guy who really attacks God. Doesn't seem to necessarily believe in God, but really likes to attack him. I think it's something to take away from Cafe Society as someone who believes in the God of the Bible is to be challenged by, should you change the message of that God of the Bible or should you not? And if you think that people aren't buying what that God is selling, does that therefore mean that you shouldn't sell it? So Woody Allen's definitely prompted me to think more seriously about how I would promote what God is about. Thank you very much for that, Woody Allen. But I would, like Russ, recommend earlier Woody Allen works than this one because Cafe Society is one of those more forgettable Woody Allens.
Cafe Society stars the usual crop of cool actors who tend to turn up for Woody Allen movies. Jesse Eisenberg, mm-hmm. Steve Carell, Kristen Stewart, Corey Stoll, and it opens at cinemas this Thursday, October 20th, and is rated M for mature themes and violence.
Well, guys, still to come on the show, we're going to have an insider's guide to how one married couple deals with the big issue of not liking the same movies. And then I'm going to reveal my top five foods that Hollywood convinced me to try.
Welcome back to the show, Sam. Welcome back, Ringmaster Extraordinaire.
Thank you very much.
What have we got on press record?
Well, relationships can be hard. That's mm-hmm. definitely true of marriage, which isn't always the fairy tale or beautiful dream that people would like it to be.
Mine is.
Okay. Okay. Well, for some people it isn't, Mark.
Okay, so I'm just saying. I feel in full
way to
disclosure.
Rub it in.
Full disclosure, I should probably say.
That is a very nice thing for you to
that
say.
That is nice,
you.
Mark. Thank you.
Love you, darling girl.
For press record this week, we've asked a real married couple, Nigel and Marion, for their help with a common situation of enormous relationship tension. What do you do when husband and wife have different tastes in movies?
Nigel, you're an Aussie bloke, correct?
That's correct.
Marion, you're a French lady.
Oui.
Yeah, oui. You guys are married. You work together in a patisserie that you run in the Hills District in Sydney. That's correct?
Yep.
Yeah, now it sounds like there are many fascinating things about you, but the reason we've got you on the big picture is because you are guys who, week in, week out, negotiate something that I think a lot of other couples have to deal with every single week as well. What movie are we going to watch? Now, Nigel, I understand that your taste in movies is a little bit different to your wife's. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes.
Can you explain for us how much different it is?
Well, going back to the beginning, I'm a Star Wars fan all my life. And
sure.
Marion, I could say you neglected to inform me of her disinterest in the whole Star Wars franchise up until, I guess, the point of no return. We were already engaged. Wedding was well underway.
Yeah, so that wasn't a deal breaker, Nigel.
It could have been. So just glad to say that we're, you know, it's all good now.
Marion, was that a tactic of yours? Did you keep that to yourself for a long time on purpose?
No, but I didn't know it was that in love with Star Wars. It was the same thing.
Okay, so it sounds like something you both had to communicate, talk about throughout your married life. What kind of movies do you like, Marion?
I spent 8 years in England, so we watch a lot of English movies.
Yes.
But all the French ones, which are my main one, and there's like some comedy one.
How does Nigel go with that? Does Nigel like French comedies?
Well, he don't speak French at all.
No.
And I tried to show him one of my favorite comedy, but his movie was been translated in English, but in English all the joke, yeah, it doesn't say anything, so all the movie was a failure.
Okay,
so with the French having a sense of humor.
So it sounds to me like you've got some cultural differences, let alone some movie differences as well in your married life. So explain to us then, how do you go about choosing what movies you're going to watch?
Well, it's first arrived, first served, really.
First come, first served?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
So does that just mean, Nigel, that you just barge in front every week?
Not in the slightest.
No.
Gentlemen, you always let me go first.
You're a gentleman.
Yeah.
The one we go to see to the cinema, obviously, we choose wisely.
Yes. Now, how do you do that, Marion? How do you wisely choose, given your husband loves Star Wars, you love French comedies, how do you decide what you're going to go see?
Well, we go to see the movie I want to go to see, and the movie he want to watch, he go on his own.
Right? So the solution, Nigel and Marion, sometimes is you go on your own.
That's correct. Hence why I saw the latest Star Wars by myself at 11 o'clock through the day.
I'm a little bit surprised that this is the strategy that you're putting forward. Are there any other tactics, any other strategies you would like to suggest to all of us about how we go about navigating this big problem that couples can have choosing a movie?
I think at the end of the day, it's that C word, isn't it? It's a compromise. Mm-hmm. I think it all does come down to that. Short of doing rock, paper, scissors, I think it's just you take it in turns. I think that's the main thing. Especially when you're going to the cinemas and when you're spending the money. If you're watching a movie at home after work, it's whoever gets home with the remote first and the other person has to just come in and deal with it, I think. But we gladly do that because if the other person wants to watch it, then we watch it together, so it's all good.
Yeah.
Last week you probably heard us launch the Big Picture's first film and TV award show, which will be coming at the end of the year, what we hope will become a great tradition in the years to come. And it's called The Eternals.
The Eternals!
It's brought to you by Eternity Newspaper. You can see the link there. And Bible Society Australia. And
you see the link, Sam? You saw the link?
Are you saying this is going to go on every year forever?
Eternally. Yes, Sam, forever. Like eternity.
Wow. We'll be sitting in heaven. Handing out awards.
We need a fact check.
I don't actually think that's going to happen.
We're inviting you, the listener, to have a say in what you think are the most eternally significant film and TV productions to be released this year. What are the characters you admired most, or the family films you most like your kids to learn from? The best stories for pointing people to God? There are a whole bunch of categories you can vote on, and you can find them by heading over to thebigpicturewebsite.com from this Monday. That's the bigpicturewebsite.com. Cast your vote there, or in fact, head over to our Facebook page to find your way to an electronic ballot. There'll also be a link going up on the Hope 103.2 site, so have a look there later in the week. So if you're listening to us through their online portal, just turn left, I guess.
Or right, wherever the button is. Click on the button.
We'll announce the winner of the inaugural Eternals for 2016 in a special show on December 18, our second last show of the year. So don't miss out. Visit thebigpicturewebsite.com and be part of the Eternals, your place in eternity.
Mate, this has been a pretty special edition. Not only are we talking about the Eternals, it's the first time Sam's joined us as ringmaster, the guy who makes things work here at the Big Picture.
So far, it's been fine.
That's a great report, Sam.
The show's not over yet, though. But don't get too excited.
We're almost there. And what we tend to do at the end of the show, Sam, as you are probably aware, we do a top five list. And I thought I'd serve up something quite delicious for you this week, Sam, as your entree into the Big Picture world. We just heard from the patisserie couple, Nigel and Marion, about their issues that they try to resolve with their different tastes in movies. So to fit in with that sort of theme, I thought I'd rattle off a top five list of foods that Hollywood convinced me to try.
Five.
Gentlemen, as you can well see, because you're sitting here with me, how would you describe me? A buff man is probably the words you would use.
They were words that occurred.
Yeah. About somebody else. Yeah. But it turns out I'm a bloke. And I thought, well, what's Hollywood inspired me to want to do to make me more of a man? 1976 Rocky, Sylvester Stallone drank five raw eggs. Five raw eggs.
I haven't
done it yet. No, it's convinced me to try it. I haven't actually...
It hasn't convinced you then.
Has it? It's on the process of convincing me, right. Sam.
It's funny you should
say that. I'm convinced
that
I want to try it. When I try it because is a whole other matter.
I looked ahead in the show notes and I actually have five eggs, right?
As Sam brought those in. For anyone who hasn't seen this sequence... This sequence in Rocky, Sylvester Stallone, for real, grabs five eggs. It's meant to be at 4 a.m. and he chugs them down before he goes out on one of his Philadelphia training runs as the boxer Rocky. So if I'm ever to be heavyweight champion of the world, gentlemen, which I've still got time, five raw eggs is what I need to try.
Four.
Marie Antoinette from 2006 starred Kirsten Dunst.
So that was Marie Antoinette.
Marie Antoinette. What did I say?
Murray.
Murray.
I heard Murray.
Oh, that was the Australian version. Murray Antoinette. Yeah. That was a corker. I love that movie. It made me want to try meat pies. But Marie Antoinette, on the other hand, from 2006 with Kirsten Dunst as that famous French leader, was full of cakes. Hollywood convinced me to eat cakes, but not just eat cakes, but eat cakes lavishly. Do you remember the scenes in Marie Antoinette?
Marie, for Pete's sake.
The Frenchies call it Marie. Marie. Okay. Marie?
Please.
Marie.
There's
Marie.
Something about cake.
That lady was surrounded by cakes. Have you seen this film?
Yes.
The Murray version, the French one?
I actually own the film, yeah.
Do you remember how lavishly and splendidly the pastries were displayed in that? Where the famous let them eat cake line was really lived out with Kirsten Dunst often surrounded by rooms and rooms full of cake. Hollywood easily convinced me to want to try that lifestyle.
Yes, Murray did.
Three.
All right. Here's something I can actually pronounce. Woody Allen. We talked about Woody Allen earlier in the show with Cafe Society and also went through a bit of his back catalogue. Annie Hall is one of the most prominent notes in the back catalogue of Woody Allen. Have you guys seen Annie Hall?
Yeah. It's my wife's favourite film, actually.
Yeah? Good on it. Do you remember the particular scene in it where he's chasing lobsters around the kitchen? Have you seen this?
Go onto YouTube and
punch in Woody Allen, Annie Hall, lobster, and you will see this great sequence that goes maybe for a minute where Woody Allen whinges and whines and prances about like a little girl around this kitchen trying to chase down a lobster that keeps jumping out of a pot that he's trying to steam for his dinner. Now, I'm not trying to suggest that I just want to run out and kill lobsters willy-nilly, but that scene really convinced me, a guy who's not into crustaceans, I'm not really down with crustaceans, gentlemen. I don't know if you know this about me. I'm not really into crustaceans.
Oh, okay, you're sort of like anti-sea.
I'm like anti-seafood. I'm an anti-crustacean. If you would have it known.
Yeah.
But the lobster scene from Annie Hall in 1977 almost has convinced me, Sam. I haven't quite done this yet. Mm-hmm. Like the eggs. Maybe I'll serve it up with the eggs. It's made me want to go and eat lobster because if Woody Allen couldn't do it, I know I could.
I'm starting to see a meal that's planned out with eggs. crustaceans and cake.
And followed up with...
two.
Coffee. Coffee. Hollywood convinced me to drink coffee. Well, actually, not really Hollywood. I'm taking a bit of a tangent here, gentlemen, if you will allow me. This is less Hollywood, more TV. Seinfeld, 1989 to 1998, one of the most famous sitcoms in television history. They drink a lot of coffee on that show. And in particular, they drink it in a diner. I can't remember what the diner is called in the show, but in real life, it's called Tom's Diner, and it's in New York City. And Hollywood TV convinced me so much to drink coffee that when I was in New York City in the late 90s, I went to Tom's Diner and I drank coffee.
You did it.
Yeah, I did it. So forget you, Sam, and you wanting me to drink my eggs and you laughing at my French pronunciation and talking about lobster. So, I've done it.
That's French pronunciation.
Yeah, that's right.
I've done it. Hollywood TV convinced me to drink coffee, and so much so that I went and tried to live the sitcom dream by dining out in Tom's Diner, but I was too cheap to buy food because I was backpacking, I was saving money, but I drank a coffee.
Oh, if only they had cake.
But I drank coffee.
One.
How could I possibly top a list that's full of raw eggs and lobster and cake and coffee? You would finish it up with the dessert that is served in Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom from 1990, chilled monkey brains.
Ah, dessert. Chilled monkey brains.
Before you call me out on this, Sam, no, I haven't tried chilled monkey brains. But Hollywood's in the process of convincing me to want to do it. And do you guys remember this feast in Temple of Doom where Indiana Jones and his sidekick, and they show up at this big dinner party somewhere in India, and they start off with snake surprise, which is a snake filled with more snakes, and then they have giant crunchy bugs, and there's a simple soup of eyeballs.
Yeah.
And then for dessert, they top it off with chilled monkey brains, which... children, you might not want to go and chase down right now, because you do actually see a monkey's head being lifted off with chilled monkey brains. It's served inside a monkey's head. I'm almost convinced, Sam, by Hollywood to try that, and that's why it came in at number one.
I'd be pretty certain that no Indian restaurant in Sydney will have any of those things on there.
No, but after we've talked about it now, they probably will.
Yeah, actually, now you say it, Murray's probably out there.
Yeah, I've lost my appetite completely.
Sam, thank you so much for joining us here on The Big Picture. Are you going to be back next week?
I hope so, if you'll have me back.
Yeah, of course we will, of course we will. Mark, what are we going to do next week on the show?
Oh, fantastic times ahead. We've got Jack Reacher, Tom Cruise in Jack Reacher, Never Go Back, though apparently
he has. And he will be, and we'll be back next week. We've seen The Magnificent Seven this year, gentlemen, but should we saddle up for Hell or High Water?
And of course, Doctor Strange, the next Marvel franchise, is on the way. So we're going to show you five heroes who you don't know about but really should.
And when we're back next week, who are you going to be, Sam?
I'm going to be Sam Robinson next
week. All right, then. I'm just going to be Ben McKechnie.
I'll still be Mark Hadley. I'll see you then.
The Big Picture is a Bible Society Australia production, sharing the light of God's Word into every corner of your world.